don't have the whole thing.
It's not the 17:30.
Yeah, 17:30.
And one of these Kohelet pamphlets.
Sorry, I'm late, everybody. Good evening.
Okay. Kohelet, according to Chazal, according to tradition, was written by Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Sounds strange to you?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. The Gemara Bava Basra, Daf Tes Vav, that gives us the first bibliography, the oldest bibliography of any work in history, the oldest book in the world, the Bible, was written by Chizkiyahu, not by Shlomo. In fact, the Gemara says that all the books that we thought written by Shlomo were actually written by Chizkiyahu. Take a look. I didn't make this up. The third line on Daf Tes Vav and Aleph in the Sefer Bava Basra says, now, the fact is that Chizkiyahu is mentioned in Mishlei. This Perek Chafei, Gam Eila Mishlei Shlomo, Asher Hetziku, Chizkiyahu Va'anoshav. What is the relationship between Chizkiyahu and his great, 12 times, grandfather, living almost 300 years before him? And here is the answer that Tosfos gives on that Gemara. Everyone knows that whenever a Gemara wants to ask, what did the author mean by this pasuk? And it's a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, or Mishlei, or Kohelet. The Gemara says, what did Shlomo mean by this? All three books begin, this is the works of Shlomo. The songs of Shlomo, the proverbs of Shlomo, Divrei Kohelet, Ben David. Everyone considers these works to be the works of the son of David, named Shlomo. So why did Chazal say Chizkiyahu wrote it? The answer is Chizkiyahu edited it. And here is the relationship between the two. And I say it in terms of the, let's say, the works of Rav Soloveitchik. You know, Rav Yosef Baer Soloveitchik has many books out now, but hardly any of them were written by him. And yet, along the side of the book, of all these books, says the word Soloveitchik. Now, the oldest of these is probably, of any fame, is Rav Avram Bezdin's Reflections of the Rav, written back in the 50s. Well, I have all the volumes here. Right? Reflections of the Rav. And down the side it says Soloveitchik. Now, that's not only because he wanted to sell more books. The word Soloveitchik is clearly going to sell more books than Bezdin. But it's because if you asked anyone who reads the books, whose wisdom is this? It's Rav Soloveitchik's wisdom. But whose words are you reading on the page? You're reading Avram Bezdin's words. So why did this have to be done? Because Shlomo was too lazy to work, to put down things to work. Rav Soloveitchik Peshitta didn't like to write things, put things to words. He let his students do it. But the point is that Shlomo was so far beyond everybody else. His words were rather incomprehensible. They were too difficult for the average person. Until Chizkiyahu came and put them into words to be understood by the masses. So whose words are we reading when all is said and done? Chizkiyahu. Alright? Now, I have to tell you that the canonicity of Kohelet is one of five books that have been questioned in rabbinic literature. There are five works that did not automatically get a pass into the canon of what's considered your Bible here. The five works are Yechezkel, because there were a lot of contradictions between Yechezkel and the Torah. Those contradictions were resolved in the Gemara and Sefer Shabbos. Esther, because it just looks to be Stama story, it doesn't look to be any prophetic value. And the rabbis explained it properly to consider it to be prophetic and Bible worthy. The other three, to round off the number five, are all of Shlomo's works. Shir HaShirim, Mishlei, and Kohelet are all found to be questionable in canonicity. Kohelet, for a number of reasons. One, the words were incomprehensible, all right, until Chizkiyahu came and explained them. But two, more important, the words seem to drive people to heresy. This book is filled with heresy, apparent heresy. It says, Dvarav note leminut. It can drive you to heresy. Why should we have a book in the Bible that can drive you to heresy? We should only have a book in the Bible that can drive you to goodness and a good life and making the right decisions and the right choices and understanding that we reap what we sow and to act accordingly. Right? Why should we canonize a book that may drive people astray? So we'll have to look at some of those verses.
Does Calvin change the words, or is just some transmitted what they really mean?
He made them, let's say, user friendly.
So change the words.
Then would you maybe go next door, get bring some drinks in from the other fridge and some cups? Do you know where they are, right?
Yeah, they're asked. What did you say?
Is that the question? Is did he change the words or did he? Did
no,
he,
I heard the question, but your answer went very fast. I didn't really understand it.
It's Chizkiyahu's words. He made them usable. He made them user friendly. The answer is that that could change things.
Who did?
Chizkiyahu might have changed and made them user friendly. Did he change all ideas? Look, in the beginning of Rav Bezdin's work, in addition to anyone else who ever wrote down the Rav's Torah, they always write like a caveat in the beginning that if there's anything wrong here, it's my mistake. It's not, you know, if I'm misquoting Rav Soloveitchik in any way. So Chizkiyahu is written with prophecy. Chizkiyahu writes with prophecy. So these books are written prophetically, which hopefully would drive these later authors in the right direction. Okay, all right. So that's one problem. Another problem is that Koheles is internally contradictory all over the book. It's only 12 chapters, but he'll contradict himself in so many issues. In one place of the book, anger is a good thing. In another place of the book, anger is a bad thing. In one place of the book, enjoyment is a good thing. Enjoying life, enjoying simple is a good thing. In another place, well, it's worthless and vanity. Right. So what I did for you is to take a smattering. We're going to do this whole book, pasuk by pasuk. Mm-hmm. What I did to was in these pages is to give you a smattering of the messages of Koheles. Well, I'm going to wait till Stanley comes back. And just I just gave you that cover page of an old man writing a scroll. You see that?
Who did this translation?
This translation is the Jewish Publication Society translation.
I'm not so sure that I like the translation utility. I don't know what bothers me about it.
Well, how would you like to see it?
I'm
vanity?
I'm going to think about it. This is what I do for. I have to think about it.
Okay.
I heard it
before.
Utility?
Like missed. Leon, how do you feel about the translation utility?
I don't know that I know enough to say, but I would think mist, like hevel, you know, kain and hevel, like mist, like that just kind of...
Hevel shivafihem, hevel is breath, hevel is nothingness. Reap the...
Is what?
Sorry?
Drink this wine.
Oh, okay.
Hmm?
I
get you some wine.
Yes, yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Well,
maybe
it's
fine.
Did I miss anything?
Yeah.
I said I would wait to read the story. Okay, but we're looking in this pamphlet now.
Okay.
Hevel means is something of no value, something that disappears. All right. Usually it's translated vanity of vanities, but okay. All right, so I want to start right off at the outset. The opening statement of the book is that pasuk just at the top. Havel havolim amar koheles, havel havolim hakol havel. There are a lot of things we do in sevens because of this pasuk. You see, havel 1, havolim counts as 2, that's 3. Havel 4, havolim 6, havel 7. When we on the way to a funeral, we stop the casket 7 times because of this pasuk. Would you believe that the earliest reference to a kala circling her husband 7 times is also for the same pasuk? In order to that they should now hear the message of Ibn Ezra, which is really a positive message. Do you see the opening phrase havel havolim? Can you conjugate that word havel for me? What does it look like? According to your English translation, it's a noun, right?
Yeah.
Havel havolim, futility of futilities. He says, he makes it into other. Just a word on this JPS, Jewish Publication Society translation, 1968. It is meant to interpret the Tanakh into modern language. Havel Havelim is to say that it means utter futility. Really, it means futility of futilities.
It means the height of futility.
Right, but the way to say this, and if you want to give it an English expression, so there it goes. But Havel, what does it look like in Hebrew grammar?
It
looks like a verb in what?
Kal.
It's kal, but
that is
as a noun. It's smichus, yes, vanity of vanities.
Yeah.
But Ibn Ezra says that it also looks like a. That would be hevel havolim. Havel havolim looks like a. Tzivui.
It's like a verb.
Yeah. A verb in lashon tzivui. Save Yeshuos Yaakov. Do this, Havel Havelim, Amar Kol Havel Havelim, Amar Kol Havel. What he's saying is, that's true, the end of the pasuk definitely says, all is futile. But what he means to say in the beginning of the pasuk is, don't make a big deal out of the stupid things in life. If something is Havel, treat it that way. Look at the very next pasuk. Mayitron la'adam b'chol ha'maloshi amol tachat ha'shamesh. What is the purpose, what's the real value for a man to strive for these things that he tries to gain under the sun? What is the implication of this? This is Ibn Ezra, mind you. Ibn Ezra is not given to drasha. Ibn Ezra is a pashtun. That there, if you should strive for things that are above the sun. Now these are obviously metaphors. Okay? There are things below the sun and there are things above the sun. There are things worth striving for and there are things not worth striving for. What Koheles means to tell you is that most things in this life is futile, stupidities. And treat them that way. Don't run after stupidities. All right, that is how Ibn Ezra makes some value out of this. Okay, now what he does in the opening, if you get the
English translation is.
Well, just be aware, it's meant to be modern and.
But I just have b'chol ha'malo, gains?
No, strife, striving, you know. Right, I'm not.
The translation, I found
very.
It's
meant to be modern, yeah. Okay, so what we have here, I just want to tell you what Shlomo does in the first two prakim, is to look for various systems whereby we can reach meaning in life. This book, most people think, is a very pessimistic book, and Shir HaShirim is this wonderful book of love that we read on Pesach time, and it's really not so true. I think Shir HaShirim is the most pessimistic book in the Bible. Shir HaShirim is the saddest book in the Tanakh. It's about two people who love each other who never can't get together. What's sadder than that? All right? Koheles is like a trip to the gym. What are you doing at the gym?
Working.
You're breaking down muscle tissue in order to make it stronger afterwards. This book will break us down. There's lots of things in this book that are going to be extremely difficult and we're going to have huge questions. The book, however, wants to come to the answer, what is a meaningful life? Get this, b'torat ha-mechkar, from empirical tests. And, you know, from the very outset, Koheles can just tell us, there is a God in heaven who's taking an accounting of everything, and if you don't get answers in this world, you get your answers in the next world. Does that sound firm to you? Okay? But that's not, no pasuk in this book reads like this. All right? Hence the heresy, you'll see, that we'll talk about. So take a look at the next section. Again, this one, what I'm giving you now is a cross-section of the book as an introduction today, okay? If we could make our way through this choveret, that'll be good for today. There should be a choveret for everyone, because I know I made about 25 copies. Everyone have? If you haven't done them? No? There must be a stack of them someplace down the way. No?
On the table?
Okay, well, let's get back right there.
No, that's
okay. Take this one. But this is my original, but it's all fine. Okay, Perek Beis, he says, Amarti Ani Belibi. Let's read it together now. Dora and Sharon, would you read 1 and 2, Pasuk Aleph and Beis? And let's see, what is his attempt in Perek Beis? Okay, so what did I try to do? Let's try merriment. Anascha b'simcha. Anascha from Loshem Nesech. Let me try wine. Alright? And I determined that's not going to work. Hedonism is not going to bring you happiness. Why not? How do you know? Maybe money can bring happiness. Well, he goes through the rest of that parak beis to show what he did to try this. With the gardens and women and song and wine and drinking and all kinds of things. Parak beis, yeah. Right, that's... No, I'm not continuing in the text yet. I'm in these sheets. Open up to the first page. So, the problem with hedonism is that the pleasure is fleeting, especially when you're talking about getting old and you can't repeat these pleasures. Then the memories of these pleasures become painful because you know you're not going to do them again. Right? Maybe you can live some memories to your children or something vicariously, but it's not that. What makes a beautiful memory is the attempt to repeat this memory, the same person or so whatever it might be. You repeat this memory, but when you get to be so old that you cannot enjoy this memory, what good is it? Now, according to Chazal, this book was written in Shlomo's old age. Yerushalayim in youth, Mishlei in middle age, Kohelet in old age. Right? That makes the most sense. There's a Rashi in Bava Basra that says he wrote this when he was younger, but this makes the most sense. He's an old man now, looking back at a life, and he's just saying, you know, this was not the best thing for me. Right? Now, the very first Targum to Kohelet, I mean, no one has the Targum here, but, you know, the Targum to Torah was written by Unkelos. Targum to Nevi'im was written by Yonasan ben Uziel. Right? The Targum to Nevi'im was written by Yonasan ben Uziel. And we don't know any Targum to Ksuvim, who the author is. What we do know, though, is that the Targum to Ksuvim takes a tremendous liberties, especially in the Chamesh Megillos. In other words, a Targum to a short Pasuk can be 20 lines long, giving you all sorts of Midrashic background. Let me tell you how the first Targum to Kohelet starts. Get this? Shlomo looked over his entire life in his old age and saw that he was passing on his kingdom to a no-good son named Rechavam, who by this time was already 41 years old. And he had no children. I mean, he must have a lot of children, you can imagine, right? He had no good children to pass on his throne. And he said, all the work I put into this world is going for naught. Because, in other words, he saw that I put a lot of efforts into this space and make this and all this stuff. Now, we know that Shlomo's kingdom was split, right? Not in his lifetime, but in his son's lifetime. There's an interesting, I don't want to get into politics on this, but there's an interesting contrast between David's cabinet. Shmuel Bet Perek Chet lists David's, that those who helped David set up his kingdom. He had a recording secretary, he had a tax collector, he had someone in charge of the army, and someone in charge of his temple, his Olam Moed. Shlomo, in contrast, in chapter 4 of Sefer Melachim, has about 40 men helping him run the country. It's a bloated government. And we know what brought down his government.
Taxation.
Whether with representation or not, taxation. Right? They said, if you lower taxes, we'll continue to serve you. If you don't lower taxes, we'll rebel and hire someone else. And he called their bluff. And they hired someone else. Yerovam ben Nevat. And that was the beginning of the end of the Israelite kingdom. It took a few hundred years to bring it down, but it was very bad. All right, so Shlomo looks over his whole life of hedonism and this aspect, and he says, it didn't do me any good. It didn't make me any happier. Here I am. Right? We're all ending up in the same place. Okay, so let's look at Lakol Zman. Perhaps the most famous part of Kohelet because of a song written by the birds? Or Bob Dylan? Bob Dylan wrote it?
Oh, that one.
Or the Birds. The Birds wrote it first?
Must have been the Birds.
Yeah, they wrote it first.
I don't remember.
Okay.
Bob Dylan.
All right, so what is it about time that Shlomo dedicates an entire chapter? Everything has a time, right? There's time for everything. It's experience, right? Now, if I gave you all $1 billion and I took away $1 every second, how long would it take you to become poor?
Depends on what you call poor. 30, you can be poor with a million.
30 years, that's just about right. Just about 30 years. Now, as your money is wheeling away, all right, don't worry, I have $600 million left. Come on, and you're losing $86,400 every day. But you have to tell it. But all of a sudden, you're 25 years old, and for goodness sakes, all you have left is about $40 million. My goodness, I mean, that should be enough for the time being. But it's just so. Maybe I should have used like $3 billion. We'll go give you about 90 years. All right, that's better, right? And as you get to be 70, my goodness, my money is gone. I don't even have $1 billion left. What can that buy me now? Right? The point is, we're born and we start dying the second we're born. Right? And some of us even take time away by smoking and doing other unsafe things, right? Or eating Gribenis. We're constantly given 70, 80 years, and we have to make the best of that time. It's the worst saying is to kill time. And that made enough for time. So Shlomo wants us to take charge of time and saying that the key to life is to be in the right place at the right time, make the right decisions, and we never know if it's going to be the right time or not. But Shlomo wants to tell us that there is a time for all these things, and he lists 28 times. We're going to learn all 28. But the number 28 is very interestingly connected to something that has to do with time.
What is it?
Sun's cycle. Every 28 years. I don't know how many of you are old enough to remember this. Maybe just a few of us here. But I do remember in 1981, we all went up to the rooftop. Actually, I went to the World Trade Center. And it was Baruch Hashem, a sunny day, because if it's cloudy, you're in trouble. You only get to do it every 28 years. It's a special blessing. It's a blessing. It's called Birkat HaChama. I assure you that lots of books are going to be coming out in the next few years, because the next one's coming up in 2009. Right? It's going to be the first Wednesday in the spring. And you're going to hear lots about it, and you say some brachas. It's a similar nusach than Kiddush Levana, only it's Kiddush Levana for the sun. Kiddush Levana, what we're blessing happens once a month. What we're blessing for the earth, the sun happens once every 28 years. And I'm not even going to get into the astronomy of it.
I was just going to ask.
I'm not going to get into it. It's based on, as Aviva
really
is telling,
mean?
Is telling people down the table
do?
Now.
We have sunlight every day.
It has to do with the extra 6 hours of make up a leap year in every 4 years that brings you to a new day of the week, and every four times seven gets you back to Wednesday, the first Wednesday of creation. But it should be more complicated than that, but that's how Shmuel in the Gemara in Brachos explains it, but that's in a nutshell why it's 28 years. Now, the sun was created on a Wednesday, right? Together with the moon. Familiar with that Agadat HaMashi? That on Wednesday, something bad happened in creation. That God created the jealousy between the sun and the moon, right? That one wants to be bigger, one to be smaller, whatever it is. What's that about? What's that Agadat about? The Medrash is telling us, the Kli Yakar explains, is that time was created on Wednesday. Those things that determine time. After the flood, God says, I will make sure that you have the seasons, the sun, the moon, all these things that determine time. Wednesday is a day of Rashi writes, a day of depression. Day the Gemara says we should get married on Wednesday, but it's a day where historically the time came in to give us this. Hey, Alan, how you doing? How are your parents? Yeah, we missed you. So time comes on the scheme, and the Kli Yakar tries to tell us what this is telling us is that you're given these 14 pairs and they're making number 28. To show us that time can be molded for you to recognize when is it time to hug, when is it time to push away, When is it time to collect? When is it time to push off? I remember when the first Gulf War took place, and at the time, I think it was still Cardinal O'Connor, was against it. He said, because it is never a time for war. So he wrote, he said publicly, it is never a time for war. And I cut out these 28 times. You know, one of them is Ace Shalom, the Ace Milchama, right?
Yeah.
Ace Milchama, Ace Shalom. It's a time for war and a time for peace. In other words, if it's a time for war and you make peace, you say we shall have peace in our time, right? Then that's the first act of war. That was the opening of World War II started when Neville Chamberlain said that we'll have peace in our time, right? So anyway, the point is that and we'll get into all of these 28, but that time has to be bent to us, okay, in order to make the most out of life. We have to do the best. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have any leisure time. Sometimes we have to just, you know, chill out. But don't call that killing time. You're not killing time. You're spending time in order to be more awake or more capable. Other rabbis, you know, schools know they have to have recess. They have to have some downtime. But don't call it killing time, because that's almost as bad as killing yourself.
Interesting, right? The terminology
used
with time.
Right. That's yes, that's okay, but don't waste.
Okay. Yeah, talk about wasting.
Okay. So that's what Perek Gimel is about. Look at the end of Perek Dalet. And the Targum says something about this as well. Look at that. Let's see it in Hebrew and English. You see it? Towards the end of the list of the times. Tov yeled miskein v'chacham imelech zakein uksil ha-shali adal yizaher od. Better is the wise youth than an old foolish king. No, can no longer be careful. Can't heed warnings. Kmi beis ha-sirim yatzalim lo, ki gam b'malchuson olad rash. The one who's king came from the dungeon, came from the jail to become king. He was chased, he was a fugitive. He was not born to be king. Who are we talking about here? Can you connect this to two different pairs of people in Tanakh? Because in face value, it sounds that very much like... Could be Yosef, not born to be king. David, of course. Who is the yelled, who's the old foolish king who doesn't know how to... Saul. Yeah, looks like David and Shaul. Marisius kol ha-chayim ha-mahalchim tachas ha-shemesh ha-mielad ha-sheni ha-shu yamot tachtov. I see that second, I reflected all about that second king, my father. Right? Even that second king, the people say this is a good king, then that's a good, even the second king is going to have his problems, as David did. And he says something strange. He says, right?
So the
Yelid Hashini would be his father, David. Right? So he says, be careful, guard your feet when you go to the house of God. Make sure that you don't do foolish things there with Korbanos. I don't think I translated verse 17. No, I did not. Now, the reason why on the next page I gave you that opening Targum. Remember I told you that opening Targum, Kohelet? Right? And what is its connection to what I just read? Is that it's not talking about Shaul and David. You know what it's talking about? Shlomo and Yerovam. He is the old king who doesn't know how to behave. He's the foolish man who didn't listen to the Torah and amassed more horses than he needed, more wives than he could afford, and amassed more money than the Torah wanted. He is the man who doesn't know how to guard himself. And who is the one who left the dungeon to become king? Who took the kingdom from him? Yerovam. Right? And then, now, by the way, if that is indeed the story, why would he, after saying this, warn people, make sure you're careful to go to God's holy place? This is amazing now.
Wait,
in this context, yes.
Yes,
because after Yerubim became king, no one went to Yerushalayim anymore. He didn't want people to go to Yerushalayim. That was part of a different kingdom. Following? Yerubim ruled only in the north. Yerushalayim was in the south. So he's warning everybody, make sure that when the chickens come home to roost because of this king who doesn't know how to guard himself, that you go to the temple. Wow. Take a look at that. That's the Targum I just mentioned before. Let me just read it quickly. You have the translations into Hebrew. You see it? Kadchaza Shlomo Malka di Yisrael Baruch Nebuah Yas Malchus Rechavim Berei Dostid Lispalga. You see it? When Shlomo saw prophetically, I'm reading this Targum. When Shlomo saw prophetically that his son would lose the kingdom, he wrote this book. Okay. I'm on what says page 3 at the bottom. Okay. Okay. Perek Hay has to do with guarding your mouth, how you talk things out. Now, it's very interesting that Rashi actually says that this section here is why we read this on Sukkot. Can anyone give me an authoritative, definitive reason why we read this Megillah on Sukkot? What's its connection to Sukkot? I understand Ruth's connection to Shavuos. I understand Shirashirim's connection to Pesach. Young love, starting out as a new nation. I understand Eicha's connection to Shabbat, that's obvious. And Esther's connection to Purim, it's more than obvious. But what is Sukkot's connection to Koheles? Or Koheles' connection
to Sukkot? You might get
content with that. Good. Good. Adarabba. And it's Man Simcha Seinu, at the time of our great joy, at the time of our greatest joy. That's the time where we have to just, become a little sober about life. You know the custom of breaking a glass at a wedding? Mm-hmm. You know what the original source of this is? It's Gemara in Brachos. That has nothing to do with Yerushalayim. When rabbis say, now we'll remember the destruction of Jerusalem. Yeah. Right? It's nothing to do with it. There was once a rabbi who saw that people were getting drunk at a wedding. And he saw that they were enjoying themselves too much. He took a very expensive crystal bowl and smashed it against the wall to sober them up. Right?
We have a lot of symbols of breaking things at the time of joy.
Right, but the question is it
Tzoyim and
right, and each one is, because that original source there, Tosfos says, from this we have the custom to break a glass at a wedding, and no one mentions anything about Yerushalayim. The point is obvious is that Yerushalayim should always be at the, anytime we have joy, remember the sadness of Yerushalayim, so it's really the same. But when all is said and done, it is really to just sober up people who might have been enjoying themselves too much. So, at the time of Sukkot, when it's Man Simcha Seinu, and we're bringing in all the crops, and it's the time of the ingathering, and we might be haughty because my whole portfolio was coming in, hey, calm down. Tikvas Eno Shrima. You know what that means? Tikvas Eno Shrima. Our end is with the worms. Right? Okay, so many a pauper has dined on fish that was caught with a worm that ate the flesh of kings.
Shakespeare.
Okay, so Perek Hay, Rashi says, is the connection to Sukkot. It's a very tenuous connection. He says because Perek Hay talks about not making nadarim, not shooting off your mouth to make oaths and nadarim. The Tanakh is very, very critical. Kohel is very critical, and you see very critical statements in the Torah, I should say, about swearing too often. Ki lo yinakeh eis asher yistar. It doesn't say ki lo yinakeh eis asher yirtzach. Ki lo yinakeh eis asher oveid avodah zarah, right? But ki lo yinakeh eis asher yistar shmo lashov. I will not absolve look old to me?
Yeah.
Okay. I will not absolve those who swear falsely. Ibn Ezra says, why is that such a concern? He says, because, look, you see, some people are more garrulous than others. Mm-hmm. Right? Some people have the gift of gab more than others. But what's really egregious is where people just shoot off and they can't think, I swear to God. And Corrales warns us not to do this. And Rashi says, that's the connection to Yom Kippur. Why does Yom Kippur start with Kol Nidre? Because of all the things that we might do wrong with our mouths, we make commitments that we can't keep. And then we upset people, and then we have to be very careful. I know people want to be friendly, they want to be helpful. You know, they saw that they, you know, that their people in the house were always helpful. If you can't do it, don't say it. Right? So Ibn Ezra writes that, you know, if someone steals and you tell them, you know, you really shouldn't steal. He says, I don't care, I like stealing. Right? And when I steal, I enjoy it, and that's it, I'm finished. Right? You shouldn't gamble, but I like gambling. Don't tell me what I shouldn't do. Now, but when you tell someone, you know, you swear to God all the time, you really shouldn't swear to God. So he writes this in his commentary, because you know what the person is saying? He goes, oh, you're right, I swear to God, I won't do that anymore. Right? So swearing to God, it becomes so ingrained. But think of it. I want you to know that the next time you hear someone who talks like that and says, I swear to God, Lord, you know they're a liar. Mm-hmm. Tell me why. You know they're a liar. Right. The very fact that they feel so little of their own word in order to bring in God to be believed means that they don't believe themselves. Right? I remember once when Howard Johnson still had the Hashgacha, we were in Liberty, New York, and we had the kitchen sink tasty tester or something like that with a bunch of flavors, and the waitress asked, do we want whipped cream with it? So I said, can I see the whipped cream container? I want to see, you know, it's because the ice cream had hashgacha on it, but then I wanted to make sure what kind of whipped cream you're using. So she says, I swear to God it's kosher. We know it. We only use kosher whipped cream. I swear to God. That's what she said. I swear to God. She's wearing this big cross with someone on it. So I said, I appreciate that, and I really, you know, I'd like to trust you, but, you know, my standards require me to actually see the whipped cream. She comes out with the whipped cream, and she was so apologetic because she was able to see right away that it was, not only wasn't it kosher, it was fleishiks. Lard in it. But the point is that, you know, it was sort of a bell goes off my head when I hear someone say, I swear to God, verify. Okay? So Perek Hay in Koheles is all about people who swear unremittingly. So he says that they be careful with that. And Rashi actually says that's the connection to Sukkot, because Sukkot is right after Yom Kippur, and the neder is such an important thing on Yom Kippur. It's amazing. All right, so that's what the beginning of Perek Hay is. Watch how you beat off against God, and watch what the things you say. You're just here on earth. Make sure that you can
swear
keep
to God as a joke, or just to use.
Yeah, I used to people sometimes. I swear to God, that was the best hit I ever saw him. You know, people talk like that. You know, you can't be. No, be careful about that. Some people just say, I swear to God, that was the best piece of roast beef I ever had. That's crazy. I mean, why do people have to say that? Obviously, he didn't put in God to be believed. But let me tell you, there are four kinds of shvur shav. A shvur shav is, I swear to God that this is a bottle of orange juice. Everyone can see that's ridiculous. But it's also a shvur shav to say, I swear to God that this is a bottle of grape juice. Because I didn't need that to be believed. When you use God's name, you better use it for something meaningful. Okay, let's move on. There's a great aphorism here in Perek in Koheles. Most people think that this is in Pirkei Avos, but it's not. Ohev kesef lo yispa kesef. If you love money, you'll never have your full of it.
It's Perek.
Well, it's page 4, the top of page 4. Now, the reason why I chose this pasuk to give you is because, look, in chapter 7 it says, Toba Chachmim Nachla. Excuse me. Nachachma Tzela Kesef, Kibitzela Chachmim Tzela Kesef, Yisron Da'at Chachma Techayev Aleha. He says very clearly, and the Rambam says this also, if you have a good inheritance, you have lots of money that was bequeathed to you, or somehow you made a killing somewhere, that's good for, it's good for wisdom to have such comfort. What if he becomes a lover of money as a result? In other words, don't be so quick to hear the people who downplay all physical pleasures and then say money is not is meaningless. Money is nonsense. That's nonsense. Right? It's talk Torah. It's chokhmim nachala. You have to have some kind of to be sure. If you can live like Shimon Bar Yochai and exist on a meager subsistence of carob, fine. If you could be like Chanina Ben Dosa's son, who lived from Friday to Friday on a small, tiny regimen of a menu, fine. But that's not for the masses. This book is not written for individuals. Okay? That's very important. There's a machlokas whether the Rambam's Hilchos Deos or whether even Pirkei Avos was meant to apply to everybody in its entirety. Right? These are the biggest hits of all the great rabbis. Can any one person incorporate, or is it only a Yisrael Salanter or someone like that? Let's do our best. I'll tell you right now, just to buy an uneducated estimate, if you can keep 60% of Pirkei Avos, you're way ahead of most of us. Right? The reason why I say this about the Rambam in Hilchos Deos is because sometimes the Rambam will say something in Hilchos Deos, and then, in another place in the Mishnah Torah, where he deals with that particular issue, let's say sexual ethics in Hilchos Deos, and then he writes about the same ethics in Hilchos Ishus, and you see a slightly different thing. In Hilchos Deos, he has bigger expectations of us. The rest of the Mishnah Torah is writing for everybody. In Hilchos Deos, he's writing to perfect yourself. And I understand that maybe you won't be able to keep all of this, right? And you can look elsewhere, and you know, that's why he has many such, I can give you 4 or 5 examples right now, about Nazirus and about abstinence and things like that. In Hilchos Deos, he has a very different approach as in other areas of the same Mishnah Torah. Okay, so Kohelet is not going to tell you that money is the root of all evil. He's also not going to tell you that the lack of money is the root of all evil, but it's not some happy medium. Let's turn to the middle of page 4. It says, Tov Shem Mishem and Tov. Okay, the best thing is your reputation. Yom HaMavis Miyom Hivoldo. What? The day of death is better than the day of birth? Excuse me? Come again there? Alright, but remember what kind of book this is after all, right? Tov lo lechas al beis evil mi lechas al beis mishteh. Do you know this is codified halachically? If you have a choice to go to a Sheva Brachas, unless they actually need you for the minion, but if you have a choice to go to a Sheva Brachas or to go to pay a Shiva call, and you can only do one of them, better to go to the Shiva call. Can you give me 2 reasons for that? And this is a Klal Gadol in general when it comes to these kind of questions. Give me 2 reasons why it's better to go to the Beis HaMishteh, to the Beis HaEvil than to the Beis HaMishteh. And halachically, it's codified in Shulchan Aruch, Shiva call, Sheva Brachas. Go to the Shiva call. Tell me why.
Maybe,
okay. Who does the other Simcha have to do with? Whatever answer I want to give, I want it to fall into 2 categories.
I would say maybe that, and
Viva, think of your question again, because when it comes around, I'm going to come back to it.
Maybe the Shiva have the person who dies is going to stay dead, and the Shabbat, maybe the people aren't going to stay married.
Oh, wow. Damn me!
So young, so giant, and so simple.
I know this is a cynical book, Sid, family, but what I do want to categorize whatever anyone says. So you want to say that what your decision of which one to go to should be from the standpoint of the person going, or the standpoint of the person being visited? That's what I want to find out. Yes.
Humbles you.
Correct. That's what Kohelet does. He says because you will be affected to a greater extent if you go to the base Avil than if you go to the base Mishnah. You go to the base Mishnah, you'll have a good laugh, you'll have a good drink, and you'll feel good for the moment, but that won't have a lasting effect on you. You go to the base Avil, you cheer up somebody, you're humbled a little bit, you feel it'll do more for you. V'achayi tena libo. You see it? Kohelet tells you, v'achayi tena libo. The living shall take to heart. It's a little bit of maybe what Stanley was touching upon, but the living will take to heart, and therefore it will affect you to a greater extent if you go to the base Avil than if you go to the base Mishnah. Now, that's very nice for a commentary to Kohelet. The halacha, however, paskins that you should go to the Beis Avel not because of what it does for you, now think from the other standpoint, what you were going to say.
Because the mourners are more needed for support.
There you go.
Than
the mourners need you more than the Beis Mishta. Beis Mishta, this chasn and kal are going to be just as happy even if no one shows up, I assure you. Mm-hmm. They may be even happier if no one shows up. After 3 or 4 days of Shavuot Brachos, you're finished and you're kaputsky. When you smile, everyone smiles with you. But if you're too happy, maybe 2 people, 20 people, 200 people, it's the same to them. But the Beis Avel, crying alone, he needs you more. You following? So, but it's interesting that Kohelis only takes it from the standpoint of what they're doing for you. You will be affected greater. That's why the Gemara in Brachos says a bad dream is better for you than a good dream. I mean, you ever have a really bad dream that you want to fast over? I'm talking about a really tiny chalom. You know that halacha? If you have a bad dream, you should fast that very same day. Only 2 days a year, you're not allowed to fast for this fast day. Purim and Erev Yom Kippur. Your Shomi, Yontif, Shabbos, fast that day. Get it off your shoulders.
What constitutes a bad dream?
Something that makes you feel bad. You wake up. You kill someone that you love very much, or something. Or you have to ask yourself, what made me think of this? That should be part of my consciousness. Mm-hmm. The fact is, I do a lot of dream therapy with people, and based on the Gemara, there's a big, large Gemara at the end of Maseches Brachos. And Chazal were well aware of the power of dreams in determining a person's proclivities and sensitivities and things long before Freud. But the point is that the general picture here is that if you, let's say right before you went to sleep, you were reading a novel about someone who killed their brother, don't be surprised if you had a dream that night of killing your brother, even though you love him very much. And you're not trying to get a bigger piece of the inheritance or something. But the point is that if it's an unexplained phenomenon, I wasn't thinking of this, it just must have just come to me for some kind of message, then the custom is to fast for that. Right? Well, so when you have a good dream, you wake up, you're excited, you're happy, you feel good. You don't even know why you feel good, but you feel good. And that's fleeting. That's going to leave you. But a bad dream may make you make that phone call to speak to the person you haven't spoken to in 2 years. And you're going to say, it's so good to talk to you. Why did you call? Because I dreamed that you died. But you don't have to say that. You don't have to say that. I dreamed that I killed you. I don't know, I was just holding your face under the water and I just had to call you. The point, though, is that it's the same issue here, is that when you go to the Beis Avel, machayitain alibo, you'll take something to heart that you might not take to the other thing. And that's why I explained this past Shabbos, that Bilam blesses us in the Torah and Moshe curses us. Right? The authority of someone who hates us, for him to bless us, is so great. But Moshe, who loves us so much, it's like another patch from someone who loves you, is better than the kiss of someone who doesn't.
Where is that?
So look at Pasuk 5. It says, Tov lishmoa ga'aras chacham me'i shomea shir ksilim. Better to hear the rebuke of the wise person than the praise of fools. Now, it's not necessarily you don't know who loves you and who doesn't hear, but it just means that Gemara uses the comparison with Achia Hashiloni's curses are better than Bilam's blessings.
When did Moshe curse?
Blessings Pasha. Okay. But I still haven't explained what I consider to be one of the most difficult biblical verses, certainly the most difficult verse in this book. How is the day of death better than the day of birth? I mean, it's really, it sounds like a Talmudic discussion, if you're familiar.
Very good. It's simple. When you're born, all your troubles lie before you. When you're dead, you're finished with all the troubles of the world.
Right, and you're born into a new existence. And we're born like this because the possibilities, the opposite. We're born like this because of the public, the whole world is in your hand, you're grabbing everything. You die, you let go of everything, right? But the fact, though, is that when someone dies, there's crying. When someone's born, there's mazel tov.
But not for him. He isn't doing the crying.
It's very interesting.
People, his loved ones.
Very interesting. The Talmud, exactly as you're saying, likens it to a parable of a ship leaving the dock. Right? This is a common thing to say at a funeral. You know, the ship was leaving the dock, and then hundreds of people say, bye, bye, bye. They break a glass over it. And say, bye, take care, buddy, well, success. Right? And when the ship comes back home, nah, who comes to greet the ships coming in? They send the ships off. They don't come in to greet the ships. And they say it should be the opposite. Now is where it kicks in. Exactly. When the ship leaves the dock, who knows if this ship is going to reach its destination, if the people on board are going to fulfill their mission. The ship comes in, you have a whole manifest, what it did, you can read the accomplishments, that the sailor did this, right? You see what it is, the ship leaving is birth, the ship returning is death. So it's that's precisely the point, is that in death, from our standpoint, we're very saddened. But that person is now born into a whole new existence. That's the tomb of Shiva, of death, is like the tomb of 7 days in after birth. And it's a double tomb for a girl, because hopefully she'll give birth one day too, so it's 14 days for a girl. But woman gives birth. So the point is that was perhaps made in a parable, and told in the Medrash in Ki Tazria, that it's about a story about two sides of an argument. One saying that life ends here, it's all over when we're finished here. And the other one says, no, this is just a short stopover. After this, there's a much better place for us, much bigger, much more wonderful. Really, really, really something that's perfect for us. He goes, no, it's finished here. When we're finished in this place, we just disappear and that's it. And they're arguing back and forth and back and forth for 9 months until the first one is born. And then, after the first, second one, the twin inside still, he hears crying on the other side. He goes, that's it, it's all finished, it's death, it's destruction. He doesn't realize that it's 9 months, they're now 70 years, and 70 years is going to be even longer after the next one. We're born into something different. So, from the standpoint of, obviously, the person, just like the first case, Koheleth only took the decision whether to go to a Sheva Brachas or a Shiva call from the standpoint of the person doing the visit, as you said. And there could be other considerations in the halacha. So too, when we say better is the day of death than the day of birth, from the standpoint of the person doing it. But we chas v'shalom don't use this to mean that we should become like a Hale Bob Comet people. Remember that? Guys who able-bodied, young, strong, rich people, very rich. These guys were extremely wealthy. They just all drank some poison Kool-Aid or something and believed that they were going to all disappear onto the back of a comet someplace. Right?
Also, in the discussion of time, but the room doesn't say there's a time to die. There's time for war.
Well, forgive me, Chava, that all of these lines.
There's a time for.
All these lines have the opposite I left out for you.
Oh, all right.
Put it in. Eis Lovedet.
Okay.
Does have right
and
next to it.
That was
the Eis Lamus.
That was my question.
Eis Latas, Eis Lakornatua. I left it blank so that you can, when we learn it later, we'll guess what the blanks are.
I didn't consult the text.
Right, so look inside.
I was not trying to challenge you.
I didn't want to just cut you off right away, but I left those blanks. Yes, there's only 14 that I wrote down, and I written down there. There were 28 altogether. Okay, let's take a look at a very important pasuk in Koheles. Ki Adam Ein Tzadik Ba'aretz Asher Yaseh Tov Lo Yechta. And we are rounding out here. He says, you know, I try to strive for some perfection, right? But the fact is, nobody's perfect. And it's either because there is no perfect deed, every deed might have some bit of selfishness, ulterior motive in it. Mm-hmm. Or, in general, you can't have anyone with perfection. I will, when we get up to this pasuk, try to midakdek one word here. One word really seems to be extraneous. What word seems to be extraneous here? Ba'aretz.
And tzaddik.
Ba'aretz.
Ba'aretz.
There is not one good man on earth who does what is best and doesn't err. I mean, what is this earth? Why? And you mean, if I'm in a tree, or if I'm in a spaceship, or if I travel, do some space travel, I can live a life without sinning? What do you mean, no man on earth? We will look at this statement on earth in a metaphorical sense.
It has to do with Bereshit.
Okay, there's something in Bereshit that is going to help us.
So Aretz cannot be understood. That's in all creation.
Okay, there's something. Remember, we learned at the very beginning, there's nothing to strive for under the sun, but above the sun, there are things to strive for.
So we're going
to look at this Ba'aretz to be someone who's like in the world. He's wrapped up and he's involved with people. Remember when Abraham prayed on behalf of the people of Sodom? Mm-hmm. He said, Ulai yesh chamishim tzadikim. B'toch ha'ir. Right, to be like an Am Ha'aretz, to be in the city. Not just 50 people, I want them to be in the midst of the city. If there are 50 tzaddikim in the midst of the city, then it's maybe they'll have their influence on the others and they'll turn them into tzaddikim. When Hashem told Yirmiyahu, find me one good person in Yerushalayim, he says, Shotetu b'chutzos Yerushalayim. Don't just find me a tzaddik. I want that tzaddik to be in the public sphere. If he's Ba'aretz, then being Ba'aretz is going to cause him to sin. I'm going to tell you a lot of stories about this when we get up to it, but there's some great stuff there about the life that Kohelet wants us to lead. Finally, just a few last-minute notes here. It's Perek Tet Pasuk Bet, Yud Bet. Although, you know what, I'll stop it here. I'll tell you why. Because this is such a long tangent, and my next year is starting now. I want to start that year more on time than I used to last year. We're going to continue with this Pasuk, Perek Tet Pasuk Yud Bet, but I want to tell you that Rav Soloveitchik used this verse at the top of page 5 to give what is going to be a monumental message about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So valuable a message that hopefully it'll transform your preparations that you're making in Elul to have a really meaningful message about the human condition based on this passage here, Perek Tet Pasuk Beis in Koheles. He thinks that this is one of the quintessential psukim in Koheles that defines the precarious nature of life and how we should use this book to make it a better life. All right? So I'm trying to convince you to come next week and stay tuned. next Monday night at 8:00 again. And Alan will be there then, right?